Session number 26588.
Alec Wingrave, Reel 5. Were there any special traditions that related to submarine life?
Yes, one very, very special, the rum issue. It was always done at 11 o'clock, unless you were at action stations or in peacetime, if there was a particular exercise taking place. But the rum was the most important thing. But yes, lunch was always 11:30 for the change of watches, so that the watch changed at 12 o'clock. So the early people had their lunch at 11:30, and then they went and relieved the ones that had done the morning watch, and they sat down and had their meal. And there was a pot of tea made at tea time about 3:30 to 4 o'clock every day. And then supper was 6:30, always. But other than that, not very much. When you were coming into harbour, the last night, if you got in first thing in the morning, the last night, very few people would turn in their bunk. They were up playing, as we called it, uckers, or Ludo, practically all night. And it was a routine right through the boat. All the messes were playing them. In the wardroom would be playing something as well. It seemed to be a routine that nobody turned in the last night, except me. The chef always turned in, because he had to get in and probably cook for the next two meals before you could be victualled into the base or depot ship. But other than that, there was very little routine.
You mentioned the rum ration. In submarines, for the junior ranks, did that mean grog, watered down rum,
no,
or not?
In some, one or two, but it was seldom two and one. It was seldom two of water, one of rum. It was usually one on one. But I served in nine of 10 boats, and every boat I was in, it was neat for all hands. It was up to the coxswain, really, or the first lieutenant. They'd have a word with each other when the boat commissioned, and they decide then and then where it's going to be. But if there was any trouble, of course, straight away it was back on one and one. But I was never in a boat that had anything but neat. It was easier to drink than one and one. One and one used to put you to sleep, so it was really dangerous. I don't think there's anything else, any other routine that took place. Except that when leave was piped, if you were away from a depot ship or a base, you went and came back aboard as you liked, as long as there was no problems, so that you didn't have to fall in and get inspected and what have you from leave from a submarine like you did from a surface ship, or even a depot ship and the bases you had to be inspected. But other than that, no, not when you went ashore from the boat.
What about Sunday divisions, things like that?
You had that about three times a year, Sunday divisions. And usually you had it extra if you were alongside a depot ship. And a four-ring captain, he fancied that he'd like it. And he gave the order and there'd be no leave that weekend. And everybody would have to go to Sunday divisions.
Any other special traditions that related to submarines alone?
Sometimes, depending on the first lieutenant, you got paid once a fortnight. So the middle week, if anybody was skint, they could. That's broke. They could go and get a sub off the first lieutenant, but not his money. It was money that was sort of sports money or something that he kept in the boat. But no, nothing very special, nothing other than that.
What about flags?
Oh, well, in harbour, of course, you had the jack and the ensign, which were put up at 8 o'clock in the morning and brought down at night at sunset. That was a tradition that, yes, was kept up always, but not at sea.
I was thinking in particular about the Jolly Roger.
Oh, the Jolly Roger was only flown when you came into harbour at the end of a patrol. Yes, sorry about that, I should have remembered that. Yeah, the Jolly Roger was only flown from the bridge from one of the periscopes when you came in off patrol, showing what you'd sunk.
What did you enjoy about submarines? What did you like about life?
Well, the easygoing atmosphere of a boat, and everybody was on an even keel. Usually, it depended on the first lieutenant a lot, what his attitude to life was, and the coxswain, of course. But in nearly 10 years in boats, I only crossed one coxswain, and he gave me a menu when we left Sheerness after a refit. I asked him what it was, being sarcastic, of course, and he said, "That's your menu for the next week." I said, "Oh no," I said, I'm sorry, I don't have a menu." I said, "I'll cook according to the ship and the weather." I said, "And you'll always have a meal." He insisted that I kept the menu. But fortunately, we went from Sheerness to Gosport overnight. And when we got into Gosport, we paid off and the boat went into reserve crew, a reserve state. So it didn't make any difference. But what would have happened? The boys said, "Oh, we don't want to lose you, Alec." And I laughed. I said, "Well, I'm a leading hand and he's a chief. So who's going to go?" I said, "Don't worry about it." I said, "But I said I won't be serving with the coxswain." And of course, we all paid off. So that was the end of that one. But the coxswain were happy to leave it to me. It took the responsibility off their shoulders. And that was it. And I was glad to do it my way.
Was that the person who was your immediate superior?
No, the coxswain, he was like a master at arms. He ran the discipline in the boat. And he, that was one of his jobs. And of course, he had to store ship. And if there was any first lieutenant or captain's reports, he had to be there and read everything out that had to be read out. And he had a responsible job, of course. And he took the wheel when we left harbour. The coxswain the boat when we left harbour and when we entered harbour. And so this is why 99% of coxswains were glad to have people that would do other jobs that should have been his.
I mean, were you left to your own devices, effectively?
Yes, yes.
As a chef?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yes, I did as I liked, more or less, but as long as it towed the line. There was a meal every time they were entitled to a meal, and I helped out with storing ship, and I would tell the tankie, was a name that the storekeeper had, but he'd be an able seaman. And I'd tell him what I wanted out of the fridge, and sometimes I'd go along and pick a joint out, or two joints, that would be convenient for the following day. And often he was an AB that didn't know the difference between a roast joint and a four ends joint, which would be for stew. And so we worked it between us. And I'd tell him what we were going to have for sweet. And if I came back with a thick head from a run ashore, we'd have tin fruit and tin milk for sweet, so that I didn't have to do anything. And nobody complained, they just left it to me.
Your first boat was
Taku.
And you joined Taku in
1944.
The war was still on.
Yes, the war was still on, yeah.
What were her duties? What was her job?
Well, she was mostly training newcomers to submarines. But we did store ship to go and intercept the Germans going from Norway back to across the Skagerrak into northern Germany. But we had a signal from the Admiralty, which had been intercepted from Norway. The Norwegians, of course, were on our side. And they said that all the Germans were doing were throwing their arms away, and all they wanted to do was get back to the mainland, Germany, because they knew that within days or weeks at the most, the war would be over. So we went back to harbour and de-stored ship, de-ammunitioned, because we filled up with our full whack of torpedoes and armament, and 4-inch and Oerlikon shells and whatever. And so we didn't go, fortunately, because there were plenty of mines out there that we'd have been unlucky if we'd have hit one of those with only days to go for the end of the war. So that was our main job. We were out in the North Sea every day with training classes mostly, and often officers' training classes. They called them COQCs, Commanding Officers Training Class. And we'd have three or four, perhaps five officers on board trying to qualify as captains of boats. And we did that right up to the day before the war ended, because we still had to have the captains of submarines. And we still went to sea when the war ended, training, yeah.
How long were you in HMS Taku?
4 to 5 months.
And did she undertake any other operations while you were...
No, she didn't. But she'd had a terrible time early in the war, off Norway in the Mediterranean. And that's why she was a training boat, because she couldn't dive below 60 feet. She did a great job early in the war.
Were you on board?
No, not then, no.
No, were you on board when the end of the war came?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Oh, yes. Well, yeah. My wife was up there then, because we knew the end of the war. She came up the week before the war ended, and brought she brought the lad with her, and I think the war, the end of the war was declared, and the pubs opened at 9 o'clock in the morning. So that was it, and. We didn't go to war, didn't go to sea the next 2 days, but we were back at sea the following week and still doing our training, because, you know, we didn't know. Well, of course, the Japanese were still on, you see. And our captain, George Hunt, he was hoping to get an A-class submarine and go out to the Far East and get his VC. But, of course, the bombs dropped and we were on our way, actually, because we paid off Taku for ditching, because she was so badly damaged that all those old boats, they were making them for scrap. And we commissioned Tactician, which was another T-boat, almost exactly the same class. And we were steaming down the channel the following, well, 2 or 3 weeks, I don't know, when the atomic bombs dropped. And so that was the end of it for us. Instead of going to Gosport to store ship and ammunition ship, we went into Chatham Dockyard and she was refitted. So that was that, and we paid off and went back to HMS Dolphin at Gosport, and then I was in there for a while, but I was on all sorts of boats then, T's and S's, right through to 53. And
S classes were smaller?
Smaller, they were just smaller, yeah. They were, I think they were 850,000. 850 ton, and the T's were 1200 ton.
Was life on an S-class submarine significantly different from a T-class?
Well, it was different for me, because the galley was forward of the control room, so I didn't get any fresh air. But in the T's, I was in the passageway after the control room, so all the time the diesels were running, I was getting fresh air, which made a big difference. But the S's were... I don't know, they wasn't the comfortable boat that the T's were. They did a lot of good work in the Mediterranean, pardon me. And
why weren't they as comfortable?
Well, they wasn't as big, you see, so there wasn't the bunks. I always had a bunk, but there was only 5 bunks for the lesser lights in the S's. And they wasn't as good as sea boats either. They rolled a lot, and the T's were really excellent sea boats. So you had a more comfortable ride, yeah.
And what sort of events, what sort of operations were you involved in?
Well, then,
the age of your career has been subs.
Well, then we went to sea twice a year for 28-day patrols, as though the war was still on, with our own surface craft, Air Force, and all the European people that had got a lot of our ships then, the French and Norwegians particularly. No Germans up to that time, but later on they did. They let them have small U-boats, and they used to come out. But I think the Spanish used to come out and join in, and that and Russia, of course, they came in and joined in these exercises, which went right out across the Atlantic, and we stayed out there, usually up to 28 or 30 days, and the other time you were day running. We were so short of hands that they made submarines into groups. They called them groups with a letter in front of them, G, D, A, whatever group. And so you had three submarines and only a crew and a half to look after them. So one boat would be at sea day running. You'd go out every morning at 8 o'clock, one boat, and the other two boats would be in harbour, and they'd be refitting and being cleaned and all the bright work that polished and whatever you, by the other half of the crew. So you'd have a crew and a half. Well, one full crew would go to sea, and the other half crew would stay in harbour and do all the necessary work that had to be done on those two. And there were about three or four reserve groups in running from Gosport, and that went on till the time I came out. They still had reserve groups there because we didn't have enough men to man them fully. And that's more or less what we did. But of course there was something I didn't take part in, was the patrols off Russia, where they were watching Russians' exercises and whatever they were doing, and following them around, you know, which went on until Khrushchev went, didn't he? I think that was it. That when they became friendly and everything went all right, and so of course that stopped. But the nuclear boats went up there and did patrols. Yeah.
So that, anything else that you remember from the remainder of your career in submarines?
Not that only one, two problems we got into when we were in Canada. The Gulf Stream is fresh water, and we were signaled to go to 80 feet or something, and the next thing we knew we hit bottom at 210, because we'd gone through the Gulf Stream and dropped. You see, your density's changed, and the density of the Gulf Stream is fresh water, so you just drop through it because it's different to the salt water. And then another time we were going from Rosyth to Rothsay, and the skipper hadn't been on the bridge since the previous night, and there was a sub-lieutenant in charge of the ship, the boat rather, and as we came down off west of Scotland, we were 5 miles off track, and we hit Skerry Vore and bounced in over the rocks into the semis. The rocks were a circle round the lighthouse, that's Skerry Vore. And we bounced over it into there, and of course by that time everybody rushed on the bridge. Well, the people of importance did, and then the first lieutenant said, clear the boat, everybody on the bridge, and practically everyone went on the bridge. But I was sitting on the galley sink, and the chief ERA came in, and it's your position reminded me. They'd been married 8 years, him and his wife, and she just had her first baby. And so they called him Sawdust, poor old the chief ERA. And he came through and he said, "Didn't you hear the pipe?" I said, "I've been up there this morning." I said, "The waves are 30 foot high." I said, "No, I can't swim in calm water enough." I said, "To get 16 mile to shore sides." So I said, "I'm staying here." So he laughed. He said, "Oh, well, I'll stay with you." And when they cleared the bridge, the coxswain did his nut. He said, "I didn't see you on the bridge." I said, "No, I didn't go." He said, "Well, the order was to clear the boat." I said, "Yeah, but I'd been up early morning." I said, "And I saw what the weather was like, so I didn't want to know." And when we got in harbour, we were steaming for 11 knots, but we were only doing four. because we knew that we were smashed up underneath. And we got up to the depot ship at 7 o'clock at night, and about 8 o'clock, the coxswain came out with a mic and he said, harbour stations at 0600 in the morning, proceed to sea. So I looked at the gun layer, who was, I was a senior at leading hand of the mess, but because I was a cook and not a seaman, I looked at the gun layer and I said, we're not going to do that. I said, come on, let's go and have a word. So we went in the fore-ends where there wasn't anybody, and I said, I'm not willing to take her to sea. So I went and saw the coxswain. I said, we want to see the first lieutenant coxswain. So he said, what about? I said, you'll hear when we tell him. So we told the first lieutenant that we wasn't. I said, this is not, the gun layer let me do the talking, because he was a Welshman. He said, I said, this is not anybody doing their nut, and it's not, what is it when you refuse to do a mutiny? I said, this is not mutiny. I said, but the fore ends are not willing to take the boat to sea in the morning, presuming the state she's in. Oh, he was worried. He said, well, I'll see the skipper. And it took over an hour. The skipper must have been in touch with the depot ship, inboard. And about 9 o'clock, they picked the mic up and said, we'll proceed to Port Bannatyne, because we had a floating dock in Port Bannatyne, and big enough to take any class of submarine. He said, and we'll proceed to Port Bannatyne and dock at 9 o'clock. And of course we laughed. We didn't make any comment because we didn't want to stir anything up, you know. So we docked the next morning. And when we got there and drained down, the sub was clear in racks, you know, supporting it. The A bracket, starboard A bracket had gone, and there was things hanging down from all over the place, and the screws were twisted up like cardboard. And they thought it was a joke, really, at first, but the skipper lost 6 months' seniority and a serious warning. He got, and the first lieutenant, he got something or other. And it took us 4 days to get to Portsmouth, and we dry docked her there in the dockyard, and she had to refit, which took a year and a half. So it wasn't so funny afterwards. But nobody ever said, well done, lads, to think that we'd refuse to take the boat to sea. And that's all she could do was 4 knots. Because of the state she was in, virtually there was only one screw working, you see. Yeah. So that was the only other trouble we were in after the war, really. And another time we went out, which is a laugh, we went out on one of these 28-day exercises, and the weather was so bad that a plane didn't take off at all to exercise with us. And the surface craft, we didn't see any. They were at sea, but we didn't find any of them. And after 14 days, we went in harbour. So the coxswain said to me, and he was a good chap, came from Maidstone, a very good coxswain. He said to me, give Tankier a hand with destoring chef, won't you? I said, no. And he looked, he said, what? I said, there isn't anything. He said, what do you mean there isn't anything? He said, we had 28-day stores. I said, yeah, but the last 6 days we've eaten it. And of course he just roared laughing and said, what are we going to do? So I got the ERA, chief ERA, to say that the refrigeration had fallen over and everything had gone rotten. And the captain signed it to say that they'd had to ditch all the food. And that was the only joke. But the chief ERA said, oh, he said, my name will be mud, he said, when it goes around the fleet. But anyway, it didn't. It was all squashed up. And it was a bit of a laugh. Because I said to him, what did you have for breakfast? And he looked at me. He said, oh, yeah, tomato, bacon, eggs, sausages. So we'd eaten the lot in the last 6 days. But you could get away with things like that in submarines, you see. We went up inboard and, of course, took a jar of rum to the chief supply rating. So that squared that one off as well. But it was things like that that happened, could only happen in submarines.
Do you have any particular memories of any of the people you served with?
Yes, when you think about it. We had some peculiar chaps. We had a fellow that I met at our parade 3 weeks ago. He was so intelligent, they called him the professor. And if we were at sea for a long time, the skipper would look at the first lieutenant and say, oh, we ought to have a so-and-so, a program of guessing games and what have you. And they used to send for George, and George would have to lay it out. It would be like something you'd have on the wireless or telly, like the name thing that comes on it. Oh, it's ITV, not your business. It's, in the afternoon, where they put so many letters up and you make words up from them.
That countdown?
Countdown. That sort of thing we used to do in the boat. And George used to have to organise it, not the wardroom where the brains were. And that's the sort of things you met people like George that were out of this world, you know, and you met other silly people. We had one coxswain where we went into Londonderry, and just after the war, they were still all wooden jetties. And only the coxswain would be on the wheel, you see, the captain on the bridge. And we'd come in, it was very narrow, the last part of Londonderry, the river there, the Foyle. And the skipper shouted down from the bridge, starboard 20. And the coxswain replied back, 20, sir. Oh, starboard 20, sir. And then he'd spin the wheel, and then he'd say, 20 a starboard wheel on, sir. And all of a sudden, the skipper shouted down, what wheel have you got on, coxswain? 20 a starboard, sir. Oh, Christ, it's port. And we took the jetty away. So he got a recommend. But he was Irish, this coxswain. Nice enough fellow, but he wasn't that intelligent. You know? And you met people like that in boats, particularly some of the younger lads. And, you know, we had one chap, when we went to Bermuda, we had a stoker, and he phoned me from Australia about 6 months ago. He used to hang around the galley. If I was on lamb for the ribs, they used to call him in the Navy, they used to call him Nazzers, Nazza Bone, and, which is a naval term anyway, for anybody name a bone, Nazza Bone. And he used to hang around the galley, and I'd say, clear off, you're only 19, you don't get your top, because you didn't get your top till he was 20, you see. And when we got to Bermuda, we'd been there a couple of days, and of course the place was alive with rum. He came in the galley and he gave me a bottle of rum. Because in the finish, I'd give him a Nazza. And I used to pull his leg every morning. I said, no, there's no Nazzas for you. You don't drink. And this went on and on. And he phoned me from Australia. And I said, who's that? And he said, Nazza Bone. I said, who? He said, the one you used to call Nazza Bone. He said, when we were on Token. That was 1946. And he phoned about a month ago. Yeah. You had these characters in boats. And mostly it was friendly, you know.
Yeah. What was the happiest boat you served in?
Thermopylae, the first commission, when she had a gun. I finished on her. When she was stretched, she had everything taken off and was streamlined. But Thermopylae was a very happy ship. We had some good lads on there, and a lot of good friends. And we used to go ashore mob-handed, you know. 20 or 30 at a time into the nearest pub. And but they did their job, and it was really a good boat. All good lads and all experienced submariners. Because when the war ended, we came back from Bermuda and we had to go to Devonport for what they called Operation Black Current. They had 9 submarines there because there was 15 foot of snow everywhere all over the country. Industry came to a standstill, and that lasted for 3 months. And so eventually we got, instead of going to Portsmouth Gosport and paying off, and we had 22 people that were up for the war only, and they wouldn't release them. And when we got to back to Gosport on the 1st of April, actually, they were all demobbed in one lump because they'd finished their time, you see. And they went, that was Token, but they wasn't very happy for the last 3 months we were on there. But we did get 28 days leave because we'd had no leave from Scotland, and then 6 months in Canada, and a month in Bermuda, and a week in Ponta Delgada in the Azores.